Welcome back to Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. Our very special guest today is Dion Allen, founder of GiveLight.org. She joined P&G in Indonesia after completing her engineering degree, worked there for 7 years. Sadly, she lost 40 of her relatives in a tragic tsunami. She's a mother of two, and she developed GiveLight, run solely by volunteers to help those in need, especially when tragedies strike like the tsunami. Welcome, Dion, and tell us about your career.
Okay. I studied at P&G in Indonesia right after college in 1989, and I joined the healthcare department, and my first product was a Vicks throat drop. And that was an amazing experience, and I worked about a year and a half, and then I got transferred to Cincinnati. P&G came on campus recruitment. You know what they do? They were big in campus recruitment, right? So they came to my university, and it was one of the Ivy Leagues in Indonesia, so I was really blessed. But I studied engineering, so my background is not in marketing. And the reason why I was drawn to P&G was because it's global in nature, and I've always wanted to see the world. And then also at the same time, I wanted to pursue my MBA, and I thought if I get a year or two experience, then I can continue with MBA. So that was the plan, but later on things change, and I can elaborate more if you think, you know, whenever the time is appropriate to do that.
So what city and country are you from?
I am from Indonesia, and I was born in an island called Sumatra, and there is a small town, you can't even find it on the map, and it's in Aceh, but I spent only the first 15 years of my life, and then I moved on to Jakarta, which is the capital, and then I went to university outside of Jakarta, and then work in P&G in Jakarta.
That frames our story really well, tied into the tsunami. Tell us about the core values at Procter & Gamble and how they shaped you.
Oh, there's so many things, Rick, but if I can maybe prioritize, I think the first one that I think is really compelling to me is the pursuit of excellence. I see that, you know, being good is not good enough, but you have to constantly strive to be better and to be best. You know, we produce superior product, and sometimes, you know, we spend years and years to make it even better, right? When consumers are already happy, but you're not. You want to, I think, you know, continue the pursuit of excellence. So that really, I think, resonated with me that, you know, I think the way I was brought up by my parents, especially my dad, A is not enough. He would always ask me, where's the plus in the A? So I think that that stays, that desire to live your best life and to be your best, I think was, I was able to channel that in P&G. I felt really the environment challenged me to be better at what I do and all the assignments that, you know, they, when you prove yourself, as you know this from your own experience, right, they always push you harder and they make give you more responsibility. So I think if I can kind of summarize that, the first one is the pursuit of excellence. And then the other thing is the leadership. I see that at P&G, especially in brand management, you really have to know how to lead, because you're not working just, you know, in your own discipline, right? You have to lead the whole multidisciplinary areas, and I feel that that also appeals to me, because I love to lead. I don't really like to follow very much, and I think I learned that also in P&G, and that also ties to the idea of, you know, management. I think I learned the art of management and the art of getting things done through the work of other people.
Can you give me a specific story about your leadership and your training and its effect on you today?
This is tougher than I thought it would be. But I think, you know, when you are given an assignment, right, as a leader, you need to really define what success would look like. So I think what I learned, for example, from the launch of Pantene in Indonesia, and that was not easy, and it was maybe one of the the earliest success that I had is that you need first to convince your own team, and then you convince the management, this is how we will define success from a volume and profit perspective. And then you translate that into the local market, because you know Pantene is a global brand, but will it also translate to the Indonesian market, right? So you have to have the right positioning, you have to have the right language to speak to the consumer. So the consumer understanding has to be there. Mm-hmm. So I think that the biggest challenge is that how do you define what success would look like, and then you drive yourself and your own team to achieve that. So the launch of Pantene in Indonesia was a huge success, and that was the one that got me my ticket to come to the U.S.
Can you give me an example of the brand and how that tied in closely to consumers?
Yeah, so for example, the advertisement, right? All the beautiful shots that we get in the U.S., they're all, you know, women with blonde hair. And in my country, for example, people will not aspire to have a blonde hair. So even mm-hmm. from the marketing perspective, from a positioning perspective, you need to know what the local consumer wants. So you have to find a local model. You have to find what is attractive locally for the people, right? So,
right.
And that, I think, when you look at, you know, what I do right now, it's a completely, I guess, a different industry, so to speak. But, you know, when you work with orphans and you work with donors, you open it to know what is in it for them and then offer that needs in a way that, you know, what they do or what how they help the project will also give them the sense of fulfillment. I don't know if I'm being too vague here, but I guess, you know, the two things that I also learned translate that what success looks like, when I started the project, right, it could have been just a local project that only support Indonesia, for example. But instead of that, when we look at the bigger issue, the poverty is not an isolated issue. It's a global issue. So instead of saying, okay, our vision is to help, you know, improve the lives of orphans in Indonesia, we said, let's take it global. So we focus on even the very, very beginning that GiveLight is positioned to be a global brand or global project that will address global issues. And over the last 5 years, we have grown from 50 orphans in Aceh to now about more than 800 orphans in 6 countries.
It's that same keen focus.
Absolutely. And then you empower people. And the other thing I learned, maybe this is a separate subject, is that once you define what success looks like, you empower people and you trust people to figure out the best way to deliver results. Right? In other words, you know, if you, from your own experience, you can probably remember sometimes people like to micromanage you, and that's not fun. And I think in general, when people come to work, they want to be their best. They want to deliver the best results. And when they feel empowered and they can see what success looks like and they share that with you, then I truly believe that people will perform at their very best. And that's what I have seen in my own team, is that I only maybe, you know, define the success. You know, we talk a little bit about strategy and you execute. And I think that's the fun stuff, because then you see results immediately. And when people see results, they become more excited, right? And they want to do more.
So when you talk about leadership, it sounds like that you lead with fire in the belly.
I think that leads me to the second part, which is you need to have a compelling mission, right? That has to be key. Because when people see that, you know, and if you look at, you just said, you know, widows and orphans, that is such a compelling cause that most people, you know, even the people with the toughest personality, when you look at children, especially orphans, most of us have very soft spots for that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very compelling mission, and then you give people the opportunity to actually truly make a difference. And the way we work is, as you know, you already know, is a volunteer run. But we find people who also are drawn, number one, to the cause, and number two, they are also people who tend to want to excel in what they do, right? And then you create this culture of, you know, not happy with being good enough, which is the first thing that I said earlier. When you always increase the bar, you feel that there is a movement almost, that people want to be part of these organizations. And I just had our fundraiser in August, and it was attended by 800 people. And I felt like, wow, there's so many people in the world who have good hearts. They just don't know where to start, right? But if you can show them, here's an idea where we build homes in different parts of the world and we help orphans, and not just in providing basic needs or shelter, but we actually basically give them the opportunity to reclaim their lives and to pursue their own dreams. And our oldest orphans, so we have a lot of success stories, and perhaps that story also kind of fueled that fire, as you said, you know, in the belly to work harder. Because for me, the work itself is my reward. I felt so happy when I see a child who is, you know, not sure of themselves and not sure about, you know, you've lost both of your parents, right? So you have an issue of lack of love, lack of attention, lack of resources. But when you surround, you give these resources back to a kid, in general, the one I've seen, they flourish. The oldest girl that started with us 5 years ago is now in college. She got a scholarship, and her GPA was 3.7. And now she told me, I don't want to stop here. I want to pursue a master's degree, and I want to go to either Germany or London through a scholarship. This kind of story really, really excites me, and I feel like there are so many orphans out there who's just like that. You know, they're probably as smart as some of our own children, but they don't have resources. What I'm doing is just basically bridging that gap and giving people here, my friends, who are endowed with resources, the opportunity to really shape lives and change destinies of people whom they have never met. And they see the results, right? That, you know, we're not just saying we do this and we don't, but we always, every year, we set our own target, but we always try to exceed that. And I think people see that. I approach this as a business. You know, this is not just a hobby. Basically, after the tsunami, I worked 24/7 for the whole year, and I was a new mother at that time. My youngest child was 6 months old. I was nursing, and I remember I only stopped to nurse him. I only stopped to feed myself and to do my prayer. And other than that, I was working 24/7 for the entire year, and I loved every minute of it. So I have at any given time about 40 to 50 people who want to work with me on a volunteer basis, and they beg to be on the team, right? But I said, to be on my team, you know, it's tough to get in, but once you get in, it's tough to get out. Okay, so that's one thing, because I interview people before they volunteer, and also I do performance review. So every 6 months or once a year, I do performance review, and I let go of volunteers if they don't perform. And that, I think, hence the message that if you want to work here, although it's volunteering, it's per se, but it is not, you know, something that you can take lightly. You know, if you have a skill set and you want to work hard, then you have a place, but you need to perform in order to be able to stay and contribute, because a lot of people are interested, right? So I can continue to grow this into a 100 people volunteer-based organization, because then you become too big and you're not effective. But if you have a principle, people actually value that. And if people come to a meeting, you're going to laugh at this. Remember I told you when my son was 6 months old, I was nursing, I would come to a meeting and I would have to wait for people to arrive, you know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes late. So I studied a new principle, which is if you come late, you pay a dollar for every minute that you're late. And every single meeting... we collect at least $30 to $60, and that's enough to feed a child somewhere in the third world country for the entire month.
Such a positive consequence.
Yes, yes, and that's how you train people. You need to, sometimes when there is money involved, they become, you know, more careful, right? But I just don't, my time is really, really precious. I schedule everything. I have two young boys, so when they off school, my agenda, you know, basically is driven by my boys until they go to sleep. And then when they sleep, that's when I start my work again. But I feel so blessed that through Give Light, I think I have become the person I've always wanted to be, that I'm able to utilize my skill sets in a way that benefit others. You know how in PNG we improve consumers' lives? That's one of our slogan, right? But with Give Light, I truly feel that I not only improve the lives of orphans and the poor, but I'm able to actually shape their future and their destiny. And it doesn't actually take much if you look from a dollar perspective because of the value equation. You know, you can sponsor a child somewhere for $30. And for most of us, what is $30 a month? You can't even go, that's like a dollar a day, right? What can you get for a dollar if you walk into Starbucks? Nothing. So I think if you're able to kind of tell the story, and I go out, I was invited, fortunately, because I think the tie with Procter & Gamble, I got invited to speak in front of a lot of Silicon Valley companies, and we are matched by almost every single major Silicon Valley companies, including Cisco. Cisco is one of our largest supporters. We just gave them an award at our fundraiser in August that I mentioned earlier. They had been given, they had been giving about $250,000 to Give Light in the last 5 years. So through Cisco employees and their matching program, we're able to support 150 lives in Kashmir and remote areas of Pakistan who are victims of natural disaster. And also, as you remember, there was an earthquake in Haiti earlier this year. So through Cisco alone, we're also supporting about 30 orphans in Haiti and from other organizations like Microsoft, eBay, PayPal, Apple, and all this. Now we are looking at 60 orphans in Haiti, and my dream is to get that to about 100 by early next year.
And you have tremendous vision. Can you tell us some more details?
One was recent. It was more like the whole journey that I took from, you know, PNG years until currently. It was a pretty recent article that was published in one of the local newspaper. And then there was one right after the tsunami. It was a front page on San Jose Mercury News, which is a pretty, I think, the largest paper in the valley. And in that, I mentioned one thing that still resonates today. And I said, I asked the journalist, do you know Conrad Hilton? I said, I want to do for orphanages what he did for hotels. Okay? And in that I mean I want to build the most beautiful homes around the world, and my clients will be the poorest of the poor, or the orphans who are the forgotten. And just most recently, a family from Sri Lanka heard about my story, and they donated a land that cost at least, you know, $50,000, 2 acres of land. And they want to build an orphanage on that land in partnership with Give Light. So I just went to Sri Lanka. I just came back a few months ago. We finalized everything. Right now we are in the process of filing the paperwork, and we're hoping to break ground in December, and we have raised at least 50% of the cost required for the construction. So I think that's one story. And the second story, this came from a long, long time ago, but it still remains, you know, so dear to my heart. Somebody from Eastern Germany found out about our work. And this was right after the tsunami, maybe a year after we built the orphanage. I think he found us through the internet. And after that, he sent his friend from Jakarta to Aceh, which is where our orphanage, our first home, is located. And 2 days later, he called my father and said, I want to donate 25,000 euros to your organization. And so to me, I had never met the person. He was a complete stranger to me. But the fact that he was willing to give that much, and he went and sent his friend to make sure that we're legit, because there's a lot of NGO and nonprofit out there who claim to do something and then they run away with the money, right? So he did his research. And what we did with that money, Rick, we bought 2,000 brand new books for our library, and I guarantee you with my life that there is not a single orphanage in the face of earth that has 2,000 brand new books. I'm not talking about torn or used books, 2,000 brand new books for the children.
So how do you get involved with GiveLight.org?
Children here in the Bay Area are drawn to this cause. And one school close to where I work, they came together. They sold pizza, they sold T-shirts, they sold fruits and anything that you can think of. And they were able to raise $11,000 for GiveLight. This was before the GiveLight name was even born, right? And they called me to the school, they gave me the money, and it was so heavy. It was in boxes full of coins and dollars. I couldn't even lift it. So somebody had actually to bring, you know, a trolley and pull it to my car. And I brought that money to Indonesia, and we bought the first stones and bricks and cement to build this home. And I will never, ever, ever forget that.
Well, thank you, Dion, for being on our Success Made to Last show today. You've obviously transcended from being successful to doing something significant, and we're so thankful for that.
Thank you so much.
When you listen to this show, we want you to become the best version of yourself. Have a great week.
So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.